Part 1. Early Years and Lighter Side. Introduction. Ruth Bader Ginsburg began writing at an early age, with the first piece in this collection being published in her school newspaper when she was barely 13 years old. Her childhood experiences helped shape the writer, person, and judge she went on to become. Born on March 15, 1933, Joan Ruth Bader was the second daughter of Celia and Nathan Bader. Older sister Marilyn called her active baby sister Kiki because she was a kicky baby, and the nickname stuck. Justice Ginsburg, however, has no memories of the sister who nicknamed her. Marilyn died of meningitis at the age of 6, just 14 months after Kiki's birth. Kiki Bader grew up in a working-class neighborhood among Irish, Italian, and Jewish neighbors, where quiet, tree-lined residential streets with brick and stucco row houses bumped up against busy thoroughfares like Coney Island Avenue and King's Highway, with their grocers, dry cleaners, and car repair shops. Her parents rented the first floor of a small gray stucco row house. Their landlady lived on the second floor. During the winter, coal was delivered and shoveled into the furnace to keep the small home warm, but there was no air conditioning to temper the hot Brooklyn summers. Her mother washed the family's clothes by hand and hung them out to dry on a clothesline that went out her bedroom window. They had a refrigerator with coils on top and a Victrola in the living room, where Kiki and her cousin Richard later learned to dance to records they bought at a tiny store in the Times Square subway shop. Kiki Bader attended her neighborhood's public schools, starting with Brooklyn's Public Elementary School number 238, a square brick building just over a block from her home. Because there were several other Jones in her kindergarten class, her mother suggested to the teacher that confusion could be avoided by calling Kiki by her middle name, Ruth. From that time forward, she was Kiki to family and friends, and Ruth for more official purposes. Ruth and her cousin Richard, who lived just up the street, would usually walk to school together. After school each day, as she grew older, she and Richard could often be found with their friends in the neighborhood, riding bikes, roller skating, jumping rope, or playing stoop ball. Ruth's neighbor and best friend, who, like her sister, was named Marilyn, was Italian Catholic. Ruth loved to play jacks on her front steps with Marilyn, and to be invited over to Marilyn's house for dinners of spaghetti and meatballs. Ruth Bader was, throughout her education, an enthusiastic and outstanding student. She loved learning to read, but learning to write was traumatic. Left-handed Ruth was reduced to tears when her teacher tried to convert her into a right-hander. The result was a D in penmanship. Ruth vowed then that she would never write another word with her right hand, and she never did. She never got another D, either. Like most children, Ruth enjoyed gym class and recess and skinned her knees in the schoolyard skipping rope and playing dodgeball. She went on school field trips to local museums and attended Friday assemblies where the girls and boys wore red, white, and blue, white shirts and red ties for everyone, blue skirts for the girls, and blue pants for the boys. While Ruth enjoyed her English, history, and social studies classes, she was not, she confesses, especially fond of math. Nor was home economics, where girls learned cooking and sewing in preparation for their future as housewives and homemakers, her cup of tea. I remember envying the boys long before I even knew the word feminism, because I liked shop better than cooking or sewing. The boys used to make things out of wood, and I thought that was fun to use the saw, and I didn't think it was fun to sew, and my cooking never came out the way it was supposed to. The sewing assignment for the eighth-grade girls was to make their own graduation dresses. Ruth ruefully recalls her creation. Mine was a mess. Ruth's mother saved the day, having the dress fixed by a local dressmaker before graduation. Friday afternoons found Ruth at her local library, which was housed above a Chinese restaurant and a beauty parlor. While her mother had her hair done downstairs, Ruth would savor her time in the library, the delicious smell of spices wafting up from the restaurant while she read Greek myths and books such as The Secret Garden and Louisa May Alcott's Little Women. Of all the March sisters, Ruth loved the lively, independent intellectual Jo the best. Ruth was also a fan of the Nancy Drew detective books. Unlike scary films, which gave her nightmares, she was not frightened by the mystery stories. She loved Nancy Drew because Nancy was a girl who did things. She was adventuresome, daring, and her boyfriend was a much more passive type than she was. For similar reasons, Amelia Earhart, the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic, also captured her imagination. Earhart had taken her historic flight the year before Ruth was born and went missing over the Pacific 5 years later. Ruth was drawn to Amelia's courage and sense of adventure. Ruth was not only an avid reader, she also created stories of her own. Her younger cousins remember her as a gifted and dramatic storyteller. She was also fond of poetry, both reading and memorizing it. A few of her childhood favorites were Emma Lazarus's famous words inscribed at the foot of the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Shakespeare's Henry V epilogue, small time, but in that small most greatly lived, this star of England. And the A.A. Milne poem, Disobedience, James James Morrison Morrison. She loved Robert Louis Stevenson's poetry collection, A Child's Garden of Verses, and was particularly fond of The Jabberwocky by Lewis Carroll, 'Twas Brillig and the Slivy Toves. Ruth very much admired her mother, who encouraged Ruth to be independent and self-sufficient. Ruth believes that this was at least in part because her mother, wishing she'd had the chance to further her own education and career, and somewhat resentful of the fact that the scarce family resources had been allocated entirely to her brother's education, wanted to ensure that her gifted daughter would have no such regrets. My mother was very strong about my doing well in school and living up to my potential. Two things were important to her, and she repeated them endlessly. One was to be a lady, and that meant conduct yourself civilly, don't let emotions like anger or envy get in your way. And the other was to be independent, which was an unusual message for mothers of that time to be giving their daughters. The year Ruth was born, Adolf Hitler became Chancellor of Germany and gave orders for the first concentration camp in Dachau. As Ruth grew from childhood to adolescence in the shadow of World War II, her protective parents tried to shield her from photographs of death camps and emaciated survivors. Nobody wanted to believe what was really happening. People thought that Hitler hated Jews and had these repressive laws, but... And although most of Ruth's childhood memories of her multi-ethnic Brooklyn neighborhood were positive, she became increasingly aware of anti-Semitism close to home. Two elderly women living on her block housed foster boys and told them that it would bring bad luck if they brought a Jew into the house, especially at lunchtime. Other children on the street repeated the myth that matzah was made from the blood of Christian boys and taunted Ruth and her Jewish friends, calling them kikes. On one drive in the Pennsylvania countryside, Ruth and her family passed an inn with a sign on the lawn, "No dogs or Jews allowed." 8-year-old Ruth was with her parents on a Sunday drive to Queens on December 7, 1941, sitting in the back seat and listening to the car radio when the regularly scheduled broadcast was interrupted and a stunned Ruth heard the radio announcer report that the Japanese had just attacked Pearl Harbor. The next day, Americans across the country turned on their radios to hear President Franklin Roosevelt confirm what they feared but still hoped was not true. America was at war. As was the case for most Americans, Ruth's world changed immediately and dramatically the moment the United States entered the war. Her cousin Seymour, Cy, a happy-go-lucky 18-year-old college student at the time of Pearl Harbor, was inducted into the Army the following May. Cy ended up serving in Europe and in the Pacific, and Ruth worried about him and sent him letters using Victory Mail, also known as V-Mail. Ruth would scrawl as much news from home as she could fit onto the small prescribed letter form, and then fold it, address it, and place it in the mail. It was then microfilmed and sent overseas, where it would be reproduced and censored before finally being delivered to Cy. Shrieking sirens for air raid drills routinely interrupted Ruth's activities at home and school. At home after dark, Ruth would run to turn off the lights, and at school the young pupils were herded together into the assembly room. Ruth's Brooklyn neighborhood had an air raid warden, and sections of particular streets were arranged into smaller zones, each with its own captain. Ruth's family was allotted ration coupons for gasoline, so they took fewer and more carefully planned weekend excursions outside of Brooklyn. Ruth and her classmates helped to plant and tend a victory garden of carrots, radishes, and other vegetables at their elementary school, and they would knit squares each morning during homeroom period to be made into Afghan blankets for the troops. One day each week was stamp day, when Ruth and her classmates could bring in their allowance money to buy 25-cent stamps to paste into a savings bond book with proceeds used to support the war effort. Ruth and her classmates also helped fulfill their patriotic duty by chewing lots of gum and then peeling off the silver gum wrappers and wadding hundreds of them into tinfoil balls for contribution to the Aluminum for Defense drives. Ruth loved the posters of Rosie the Riveter, portraying a strong and able woman supporting the war effort with her factory work. On the afternoon of April 12, 1945, Franklin Roosevelt, who had been president for 12-year-old Ruth's entire young life, died suddenly in Warm Springs, Georgia, of a cerebral hemorrhage, and Harry Truman became president. 2.5 weeks later, on April 30th, Adolf Hitler committed suicide in his bunker, shooting himself in the right temple as Allied forces closed in. Berlin fell on May 2nd, and less than 1 week later, on May 8th, 1945, Ruth watched as New Yorkers danced in the streets to celebrate VE, Victory in Europe Day. Ruth remembered VJ, Victory Over Japan Day, later that summer much differently, since it came just after the United States dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Well, it was stunning, something we had no idea was in the making, and then it was in the paper. Tremendous clouds, the horror that we had killed so many people, and people were burned and scarred for life. There was that pall over VJ Day. Even though it was the end to it, everybody realized the instrument of destruction that had been launched, and I suppose feared for the future with such a weapon like that. So I remember VE Day as being total jubilation, but VJ Day affected very much by the bomb.